Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrivia, so Talis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Joe.
And I'm Cassie, and so you know, we were having a staring contest before Joe started, and I won.
I disagree.
You blinked when you started saying hello and welcome to Podtrivia, so Talis.
I don't think that counts.
It does. So I won the staring contest, and we're here to talk about Chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Cornelius Fudge.
That's correct.
Yeah,
and it is your turn to do the chapter summary.
It sure is.
I'm getting the timer up. 3, 2, 1.
There haven't been any attacks in 4 months, and the school is starting to return to normal. The kids are concerned with Quidditch and picking out classes for the next school year. Harry, Ron, and Hermione decide not to ask Hagrid any questions about his expulsion unless there's another attack. Harry hears the voice again, and Hermione realizes something and rushes off to the library. Harry goes down to the Quidditch pitch for a match, but the game is stopped by McGonagall because Hermione and Penelope Clearwater have been petrified. Harry and Ron use the cloak to visit Hagrid to get answers, but while there, the minister carts Hagrid off to Azkaban, and Lucius removes Dumbledore as headmaster.
Ooh, 28 seconds.
Oh, yeah. I'm really good. And that's with, I tripped up a bit there.
Yeah, there were some pauses. Yeah. So I'm impressed.
I read the word Quidditch and started thinking the word Hogwarts. And it just, you know that when you like are thinking about a word, but saying another thing, or like when you're writing a word and thinking about the next word you're going to write and then you mess up the word you write. Yeah, that's what happened. But I still made it in time.
Yep. With a whole 2 seconds to spare.
Yeah. You know, I like that breathing room. Yeah, this is a good chapter. I feel like I either enter these episodes like, I love this chapter, or this is a fine chapter. And I feel like the last couple ones I've been like, this is a fine chapter.
Yeah, you've been kind of down on them.
But like, I really like this book.
Yeah, this is a very good book.
I think it's just that I'm bored by plot heavy things. And I think part of it is also that like, we are not experiencing the plot for the first time. So like this chapter would probably be more exciting if I didn't know what was going to happen next. The way this chapter opens reminds us of some of the other dangerous creatures that Hagrid has kept as pets, because we're picking up off the last chapter where we discover that Hagrid was like taking care of the monster that did the attacks 50 years ago. So this chapter says like, well, you know, Harry and Ron weren't too surprised that Hagrid would like dangerous creatures. And there's a line here. It would be a long time before they forgot the giant three-headed dog he'd christened Fluffy, which I found this very funny because I think this is the last time that Fluffy is ever mentioned.
That doesn't mean it's not haunting their dreams.
That's absolutely a possibility. I just, and I could be wrong, like it's been a long time since I read these books last, but I really don't feel that Fluffy is ever brought up again.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, but I like this idea that they're like, well, Hagrid with a dangerous monster accidentally letting it loose. It tracks.
It absolutely does track.
Yeah.
And like, so they talk about the dragon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Norbert. Norberta. I'm sorry. I don't mean to misgender Norbert.
And then, of course, Fluffy. But like they go into his mindset and say, like, well, he probably felt bad for it being cramped up in there. So yeah, he had to release it.
It just needs to stretch its hairy little legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. And I think that, I don't know, there's a lack of urgency, I feel like, after this revelation that like it was a big twist, I guess, in that last chapter of like, Hagrid did it. Hagrid is the one that caused all these problems 50 years ago. And then this chapter is kind of just like, well, there haven't been any attacks in a while. And I understand it from like a compassionate standpoint that they're like, we're not going to bust down Hagrid's door and bring up what is obviously like a difficult past for him. But they also just seem like they're like, well, let's just forget about it all.
They're very optimistic that not only are they confident it wasn't him, but they're optimistic that it's just done and they are dreading like confronting
just like,
their friend.
This was a huge, like they brewed an illegal potion to try to figure out what's happening. And now they're just content that it's like, well, everything seems to be back to normal.
I mean, at this point, their one lead is a friend who is very innocent in their eyes.
Well, not innocent exactly, because Harry and Ron both seem to be sticking with the whole like It was probably Hagrid, and it was an accident, but he still did it. Hermione is the only one that brings up innocence, which I think is interesting. She says that Riddle might have nabbed the wrong person, and that whatever monster that Hagrid was housing was maybe not the one responsible for the attacks. And Ron has a fun reply here. He says, "How many monsters do you think this place can hold?" And I highlighted that and wrote, "Ron, you sweet summer child." Like, if only you knew.
They've already run into
a bunch.
Yeah. And they know there's more.
Like, why is he drawing the line here? Why is he like, no, just Hagrid just had
Hogwarts,
the one.
Really?
Yeah, I found that pretty funny. But Harry and Ron seem content to just like let it be.
Yeah, no, nobody wants to have that conversation with Hagrid.
And I get that it's awkward, but like, people have been petrified for like a really long time.
Yeah. I think part of it is they don't want to be the one to break the news, but also they don't want it to accidentally get out. Like, how many conversations with Hagrid have been like overheard by people and caused them to get in trouble?
Yeah. So maybe, I guess it's just that they're willing to let it slide in order to protect Hagrid, because also they would have to have a difficult conversation about like, how do you know this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't want to explain. Well, we've got this magic diary.
Yeah, this diary I found in a toilet told me.
Well, if only they did get to talk to Hagrid, because despite even at the end of this chapter, them going to visit him, they still don't really have a conversation with him.
No. Yeah, it is. They do kind of miss that. Yeah, but they're like distracting themselves with other things. Harry is going to a lot of Quidditch practices because my boyfriend Oliver Wood is getting amped for that Quidditch Cup, and they are sorting out their school schedules for next year.
They have options for new electives.
Yes, they do have to keep all of the classes that they're currently taking because Ron says he wants to drop Defense Against the Dark Arts and Harry wants to drop potions. But they mention ancient runes, divination, and arithmancy. I think I'm saying that right.
Probably.
Okay, we'll just go with it, and somebody can email us that our pronunciation is wrong again. And I want to talk a little bit about arithmancy. I want to save divination for later because
get into it.
Yeah, it'll be big later. But arithmancy it sort of merges divination, and just to speak very broadly, divination is like seeking hidden knowledge, usually about the future or about like present developments using like supernatural processes or rituals, that sort of thing. So arithmancy merges divination with numerology, which is something I know a very, very little amount about because I'm not a crazy person. But numerology assigns like mythical meaning to numbers, and arithmancy goes on to assign numbers to letters, words, and phrases and tries to like mathematically approach divination.
That seems like the version that Hermione would like the most.
Exactly. And that, again, this is a conversation we're going to put a pin in and discuss later on, but Hermione's relationship with arithmancy and divination is going to be big in the next book.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked that they're almost the same, but that arithmancy takes that mathematical approach. Of course, I'm not sure how the average Hogwarts student will succeed in arithmancy, considering that their mathematical education stopped at 10. Grade 5, or I guess not in the UK, but yeah, at 10 years old, and then picks back up at 13. But yeah, I found that interesting. Numerology is like a whole other thing. I was kind of exposed to it as a child through Galadriel, because she does a lot of like numerology stuff around the letter 12 in the Harry Potter series and the number 7.
Okay.
Sorry, the letter 12, the number 12 and the number 7. But there's also this Edmund Spencer, the fairy queen. There's a lot of numerology stuff in there that I pretended to understand when I took a British literature course. I liked this conversation, both for the details hidden in it and just the way that it foreshadows some things that are going to be really, really important come the next book.
Yeah. I also liked when Ron is saying that he wants to give up Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yeah.
I haven't learned anything from him except not to set pixies loose, which literally happens in the very first lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ron has not learned anything this year.
Which I believe.
Yes. But I also found it interesting because like when he first said that, I'm like, what? Defense Against the Dark Arts? That's like the coolest subject. It's so important. But I'm like, oh, no, they have had like two super incompetent professors so far. Like, it's no wonder that they hate the subject.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as I know, Quirrell was fine.
I don't know. I don't.
I mean, he.
I don't remember
he wasn't
them
a good
ever really
person, but he
going. They said that it seemed like he was scared of his own subject.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me implies that there was maybe a lack of depth for a lot of these things. And also they were first years.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So they weren't learning a ton.
Yeah.
It was a lot of basics anyway.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is something that Quirrell would have been okay teaching, even mm-hmm. if he was afraid of everything else.
Yeah. So.
But at one point he was a very good Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
I always remember in the scene in the first movie when McGonagall goes to pull wood out of Defense Against the Dark Arts, Quirrell is like holding an iguana.
it's show and tell time.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's an interesting sort of foreshadowing for next book as well, that maybe Ron's relationship and all of their relationships with Defense Against the Dark Arts will change come the next book.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We've never read it. There's no way to know. Also on the subject of the class schedules, I really liked this line. Hermione took nobody's advice, but signed up for everything.
Yeah. And I liked... Percy gave like actual legitimate advice.
He did give a legitimate advice. And I find the advice that he gave very entertaining because he says it's never too early to think about the future. So I'd recommend divination.
Yeah. The study of future, basically, like telling the future.
Yeah. That's what's fun about it. I think it works on both levels that.
Well, I think that's exactly what he was trying to do.
I think so, like, too. But yeah. It becomes an issue in the later books when they're looking at dropping subjects that you have to take certain subjects in order to get a newt in them in order to like get into a career field.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that it kind of works on both levels, that Percy could be recommending divination because he's like, oh, this might open a lot of doors for you as far as like future careers, but also just like, well, it's time to think about the future and maybe divination will help you get an idea of what your future might look like, Harry. Yeah, I found that very, very funny.
Yeah. And he does continue with like genuinely sound advice.
Yeah.
He says people say Muggle studies is a soft option, but wizards should have a thorough understanding of the non-magical world, particularly if they're working in close contact with them. His dad does that. I think Ron brings that up.
Yeah. And he says just like working in the ministry, like that's an important thing, at least in certain parts of it. And but I feel like that's kind of a tone deaf recommendation because Percy knows that Harry was raised by Muggles.
Yeah, he's just going through. I think he's just reading off the list and giving his two cents about each one.
Right.
He says that his brother Charlie was an outdoorsy type, so he went for care of magical creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just says, you know, play to your strengths,
Which
is like actually good advice from Percy, which we don't really hear him do anything but complain most of the time. So to hear him like, be a prefect is nice.
Yeah, yeah. This did kind of pull me back to like in, I don't know if it was really in middle school that you got to pick your classes, at least in our school, but definitely in high school you got to kind of pick your electives. And I remember the guidance counselors always asking like, what do you like? Like, what do you want to do? And I was always like, well, nothing that there's a class about. Yeah. And I remember like other people that I knew, like I just took technology classes because I like technology. But I remember like siblings and friends always being like, I don't know what I want to take. Like, I don't really care about anything. So they just take art classes. And I found it interesting that Hogwarts doesn't really seem to have like humanities subjects like that.
Hmm.
Like Percy says that Muggle studies is a soft subject. And I guess you could liken it to like maybe sociology in our like academia. But yeah, there's no like art or literature or any of that like good humanities stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like charms, while having a lot of other applications, could be used as like an expression kind of thing.
Okay, I guess like I could see that. Yeah, charm something to look a certain way, like when Flitwick decorates the Great Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I guess their Defense Against the Dark Arts class has been turned into a literature class and not a very good one. Yeah, I don't know. It's something I think about, that their education is very practical. Like, I don't think it's very much in the spirit of liberal arts.
No, no, not really.
Yeah.
Everything has a purpose.
Yeah. My notes.
Which is why they don't teach math.
My notes for this chapter jump from the class schedules to Hermione is petrified. Like, there's stuff that happens in between that, Harry is like getting ready for the Quidditch match, and he hears the voice again, and he says to Harry, to Ron and Hermione, like, don't you hear that? Don't you hear that? And Hermione like face palms. She's like, oh man, I just realized something.
You jumped over a big part though.
Did I?
Yeah. Harry gets robbed.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. I left that out of my chapter summary. Okay, let's talk about Harry getting robbed first.
So Harry is coming home from a Quidditch practice and he's feeling really good about it. He's really hopeful. This is the night before his big Quidditch game against Hufflepuff. And now that I'm saying it out loud, are there only 4 games a year?
I think so. Yeah.
No, wait, hold on. Let's do some quick math.
They did Slytherin.
Yeah, they fought Slytherin. No, well, Quidditch, it would be Slytherin. Each team plays against each team.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's 16, right? Or
no.
12?
Hold on, there's a formula to figure this out.
Yeah, isn't it just 4 times 4?
No, because they wouldn't be playing against themselves.
Okay, so 4 times 3.
I think it's... I think it's the exclamation point.
Oh, God. What is that? Isn't that like imaginary numbers?
No, that's an I.
Oh. But there are 4 teams, and each of them play 3 other teams.
Let's get my calculator out.
So that means 12.
But you wouldn't repeat the games. Slytherin against Hufflepuff, so okay. Hufflepuff doesn't have to play against Slytherin.
Does the phone calculator have the exclamation point?
We're about to find out.
I feel so bad for people who know anything about math listening to this.
Yes, it does. All right. 4 exclamation point. 24. That doesn't sound right at all.
I'm going to draw a picture while you figure that out.
Yeah, I just need a piece of paper.
Now I'm working it out.
Because I've definitely made these graphs in math class before.
I think it's 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think you might be right.
Yeah, I think so. How did we get on the subject? Okay, Harry was coming back from Quidditch practice. So yes. 6 games a year.
6 games a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. There's probably some kind of tournament bracket, though, right? Because in order to win the Quidditch Cup...
Oh, yeah. Don't they, like, play the same team again at some point or no? Or is it just like...
Just when we thought we figured it out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
What we need to do is play Harry Potter Quidditch World Cup and just go off of that.
Okay, but that'll be the World Cup.
No, no. So, at least in the Game Boy Advance version, I never made it far in the PlayStation 2 one. In the Game Boy Advance version, you start by doing the Hogwarts Quidditch Cup. And then once you win that, you go on to doing the World Cup.
Ah.
Yeah.
No wonder Gryffindor never won... Rowling didn't want them to go into the big leagues.
And... The Gryffindor doesn't go into the World Cup. Like, you start again, like, you pick a World Cup team, okay. And then...
I was kidding.
Okay. I won't stand for ignorance regarding Harry Potter Quidditch World Cup. That was a phenomenal video game.
So, Harry gets robbed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so He goes home. Yeah. Well, he goes to his dorm room.
Right.
And Neville is like shakily waiting outside his outside their room, and nobody else is there. Neville's just like afraid to open the door for Harry and saying like, I'm so sorry. I just found it like this.
Yeah.
And only Harry's stuff is destroyed.
Yeah.
And like destroyed. His cloak was torn up and thrown on the floor. I was briefly worried that was the invisibility cloak, but they do use the invisibility cloak later in the chapter, so we know that's not the case. All his bed clothes, which I'm assuming are just sheets.
Yeah.
All his sheets are comforter. Ripped yeah. off. Yeah, everything is just torn up, and his pockets are turned out.
Yeah.
So they deduce they were looking for something and try and figure out what it is, mm-hmm. and it was Riddle's diary. It's the only thing that they can figure out is taken.
Right. Which has some interesting implications. One that Harry and Ron bring up, that it had to have been a Gryffindor because only a Gryffindor could have gotten into the Gryffindor common room.
Theoretically. It's just a password.
Right. And we just saw a couple chapters ago that like there are some inventive ways, but that's the conclusion that Harry and Ron draw.
Yeah. But also importantly, Hermione was able to just go into their room. So there's no, like, during Christmas, she just shows up in their room. So there's no security room to room.
Right.
So it could be any...
Anybody who had access to the common room.
Yeah, anybody who had it. So any Gryffindor could have done it.
And there's another implication here is that somebody knew that Harry had it because they were clearly targeting him specifically. It's not like the whole room was torn apart.
They just looked through his stuff.
Yeah.
And they didn't take anything but that diary.
Right. it does introduce the issue of the invisibility cloak. Like, I guess they would have just passed over it, whoever this was, but like,
from what I can tell, it just looks like a cloak until you put it on.
Right. And then also, we have to think back to the only scene that was really public. Like, we have to think to who knew that Harry had this diary.
Malfoy.
Moaning Myrtle, Malfoy, Percy. Like, there were people in that scene. But it would have to be somebody who not only noticed that Harry had a diary, but knew
what the diary was.
Right, exactly. And so Malfoy just picked up the diary.
And assumed that it was Harry's diary.
Right. So we can kind of eliminate him as a possibility because it would be hard for him to get access to the Gryffindor common room. And he didn't seem to know what the diary was when he held it before. So there must be somebody who previously had used this diary or had come in contact with the diary, who threw it in Moaning Myrtle's toilet, recognized it in that scene with Harry, and then had the means to go and steal it from him.
Yeah. And at this point, we don't know who previously used it, so we don't have a solid conclusion.
Right. But there are some really good clues, I think, that are set up. And I think is why Rowling was able to transition. For those who don't know, after she wrote the Harry Potter series, she published The Casual Vacancy, which is like an adult novel that I read like half of. And then under a pseudonym, she wrote some mystery novels. And it only came out after, I think, two of them were published that it was her. She used the name Robert Galbraith or something like that. And I think that it makes sense for her to jump to mystery novels because she's good at planting these clues, at setting up things that point you in the direction, but never out and out say it.
Yeah.
Like there's in the Agatha Christie way, there's like the list of suspects and you have to go through and be like, well, it couldn't have been Malfoy because he didn't know what the diary was at this point. So who else do we have to consider? It's very entertaining. And I think this is where she's at her strongest as a writer.
Yeah. And I won't say who it is, but someone is explicitly pointed out in that scene.
Yeah. I didn't want to list them.
Yeah. But my favorite example of that in this book is such an inconsequential mystery that's just going on, which we'll address, I think, only in the last chapter when it's brought up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun because there's a lot of red herrings like that. There's a lot of possible suspects and a lot of things that we can look at and scrutinize and maybe arrive at the truth if you're a really good guesser. But I think it's hidden really well.
Yes. And nothing seems like it's just pulled out of thin air.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. These books are good.
Yeah. So moving on to breakfast.
Yeah. So then let's skip back to that scene that I described, that Harry's getting ready for the Quidditch match. He's anxious. He hears the voice again and Hermione realizes, oh my gosh, I just figured something out. I need to go to the library, and slaps herself in the head and runs off to do that. And Harry and Ron like make fun of her. But like they've gotten good information from the library in the past.
Yeah. I wonder if Harry is at all concerned about her missing his game, but
I don't think so.
In that light, he does walk away thinking, well, at least everyone's going to be outside, knowing full well Hermione just went the opposite direction. Oh,
that's true. Yeah, maybe he assumes that she's going to be faster than she will be in the library. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't think he cares about her missing the match because it's just against Hufflepuff.
but he doesn't think twice about, oh, Hermione's in danger now.
Oh, that's such a good point. I also wonder to what extent the Quidditch matches are optional. Like, is anybody escorting them out to the Quidditch matches and making sure everybody goes?
Or I doubt
it. Do some kids just not go?
I doubt it.
Okay. I was just curious about that. I remember in high school when they would have like pep rallies at the end of the day, it was technically like in place of one of your last class of the day. And they'd always be like, well, this is mandatory because you're supposed to be in class at this time. And I would just leave.
Yeah, I lived very close. So it was an easy walk.
Oh, I walked like a mile and a half home instead of watching the pep rally. So I want to talk about Hermione getting petrified.
Yeah.
Harry. It's an important plot point, I think. So Harry's going to the Quidditch match. They're getting all ready. They're on their rooms and McGonagall walks out with a purple megaphone.
Yes, I loved that detail.
Yeah.
I was hoping that I would find more information about the giant purple megaphone, but alas, there is not.
And basically cancels the Quidditch match and they go to object and she's just like, Harry, you should come with me. She takes him to the hospital wing and shows that Hermione was petrified, as well as the Ravenclaw girl that they asked where the Slytherin common room was.
Yes.
fun, important detail for later. She opened the Chamber of Secrets. No. yeah, so I want to talk about Hermione being petrified. I think that one could look at this as the primary female character being removed from the action, kind of in the 11th hour.
I suppose. But on the other hand, the book would be several chapters shorter if Hermione just gave them the answer right now.
I think that's the only thing I have have a problem with. And this could easily be solved by just like, oh, Hermione realizes what she realizes much later in the book. But it's just, it's interesting that Hermione is so competent that it would kind of ruin a lot of the buildup to these climaxes because Hermione knows the answer. Mm-hmm. And we've seen in the past, and this is why I don't think it's a perfect criticism, that like, even though Hermione knows a lot of the answers, she's not always able to apply that knowledge in the heat of the moment, like with the devil's snare thing. Mm-hmm. And that she doesn't realize maybe obvious things, even though she has like all of this book knowledge, like common sense things are not always her strong suit. And so I don't think it's a perfect criticism, but I do think that it's something worth bringing up. I think that Hermione in general is a well-rounded, well-portrayed, empowered female character. I mean, like three chapters ago, we saw her brew the Polyjuice potion. So like, we can't really make the argument like, well, it's up to the boys to save the day.
Because it's very much not.
Yeah. But I think there is also a pattern of like, we need to take Hermione out of the action and let Harry be the one to save the day.
Yes. There is going to be a recurring theme of like, well, he's got his friends up until the end, but then right. at the end, they're conveniently something not happens. There.
Yeah. Ron yeah. dies in a chess match. Like something happens to prevent it from getting there. And like Harry is helped by his friends and it's implied that he like couldn't have gotten to that point without the help of his friends, mm-hmm. including Hermione and including Ron.
He does get by with the help of his friends.
Yes. And like Ron is also removed at the 11th hour. So like, I don't think it's necessarily a gendered thing.
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah.
And in the last book, Ron is the one removed first.
That's true. Yeah. Not in the movie, but they really. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this will continue to happen.
Yeah.
He will just like one of them's out of the picture for now.
Right. But I do think it is fun to see Harry and Ron have to solve problems on their own without Hermione. Because Hermione always knows the answer. Like sometimes we need those scenes of like, this is how Harry and Ron work out problems without Hermione. And maybe they're not so good at it, but they still show their own strengths.
Yeah.
In these moments too.
And additionally, I feel like the next scene we're coming to where they go visit Hagrid, mm-hmm. Hermione probably would have been a lot more blunt. She would have gotten to the point. They wouldn't have waited yeah. around for him to serve them hot water.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like Hermione would have gone straight to the questions and they would have gotten a lot more information than they did.
Right. Yeah. 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 It's something that I was thinking about and wanting to bring up because I feel like we did talk about this a tiny bit with the Polyjuice potion as well, that like Hermione does all this stuff in the lead up to it, but then in like the actual moment, she doesn't get to come with them because she turns into a cat.
It almost seems like Harry and Ron are her henchmen. She's just like, here's the tools to do the thing. Just do that for me.
That's a fun read of it. In some moments, I think that it is just that like Hermione is too competent that it's hard to write some scenes and account for her not just figuring everything out.
To an extent.
Does that make sense? Like she has to be removed from the plot so that the plot can continue. I don't know. I think it's an intentional move to let the rest of the book play out the way that it does. And I like the way the rest of the book plays out. And I think that there's nuance here that we haven't brought up, but that is absolutely present, that like part of why Hermione is victimized is because she is a muggle born.
Yeah. Something had to happen to
her. Right. And it had to be something that was close to Harry and Ron, that like before they had kind of like brushed off some of the attacks and they're like, well, there hasn't
it's
been
nearly
one.
Headless. Nick.
They need that hit to be like, you got complacent. And you got complacent in somebody you really care about.
Yeah, you sat around for 4 months. Yeah,
right.
And then you heard the voice and chose to go play a sport.
You heard the voice. You knew who did it last time, or at least who got in trouble for doing it last time. And you still decided to not do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I wanted to bring up. I don't think that this is a problem from like a feminist perspective.
Okay.
For me. People can disagree.
Yeah, I mean, it is two times in a row that Hermione kind of gets the butt end of the stick.
That's why it stood out to me. That, like, in the context of this book, Hermione has kind of been removed from a major event twice now.
That's all right. Ron's going to get his comeuppance next book.
Do you know what comeuppance means?
I mean, it's going to come back and bite him.
Oh, okay. That's right, then.
Literally bite him.
All right, let's not skip ahead here. All right, so McGonagall escorts Harry and Ron back to the Gryffindor common room. And at her announcement at the Quidditch match, she says, like, all of your heads of houses will go and talk to you in your common rooms. And basically, like, imposes martial law in the school. She's like, you will not go to the bathroom without a teacher escorting you.
That was one thing I highlighted. That was very weird.
Joe. Bathrooms are dangerous.
Bathrooms are very dangerous.
Bad things happen in the bathroom at Hogwarts.
But bathrooms are dangerous in ways that the teachers aren't aware of at the moment.
I mean, they knew the troll.
I guess they knew the troll. Still, I don't think they're afraid of a troll right now.
And I don't think they're afraid of the bathroom for the reason they should be afraid of the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, but yeah, like, I think that line was written in there as a fun nudge to, like, things that will come in the future, but also as a, like, this is how serious the situation is. This is how much you are not able to be alone now. And not to bring it to a real place and upset some people, but it was kind of hard to read in the context of, like, where we are right now and seeing schools responding to a crisis. I think it just had a little bit extra weight of picturing McGonagall in this common room with all these kids looking upon her and, like, basically having to say, like, these are the safety precautions that we need to take, and they are extreme, but that's the situation we're in.
You're not going to like it, but it will keep you safe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's
and then tough. Harry and Ron just ignore them immediately.
They do ignore them immediately. I do want to talk about Lee Jordan before we get there, though. Mm-hmm. So McGonagall leaves the common room, and of course the kids are, like, talking amongst themselves, and Lee Jordan, a friend of Fred and George, Quidditch announcer, he brings up, like, why has nobody done anything for the Slytherins, about the Slytherins? Like, it's Slytherin's heir. It's Slytherin's monster.
And people from every house have been attacked except for Slytherin.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he does have a point. but it's, I think, another great example of something that we discussed in the Dueling Club chapter about how it's so easy to jump to, like, a scapegoat in times of crisis, that it's easy to point fingers at people. And we want to believe that, like, if we just remove this one threat, everything will be fine again. Like, everything will go back to normal. But it's not that simple. That, like, even if they threw out all the Slytherins and somehow got the heir of Slytherin out of there and none of these attacks ever happen again, there's still this culture of prejudice and blood purity that led to these attacks that just would not be addressed.
Yeah. You would just be putting them somewhere else.
Yeah. It's... What is the whole thing about, like, fighting the symptom and not the disease? I don't know. I don't remember the exact phrasing.
I was curious why she decided Lee Jordan.
That's a good point. She threw a dart at the Gryffindor student dartboard and it landed on Lee Jordan.
Which at the moment is not a very big dartboard.
There's, like, Neville, Seamus, Dean. I think it has to be...
Yeah, we have the... Like, it couldn't be the second years.
I think it has to be an older student.
And I feel like it would be weird if it was just another one of Harry's teammates. So,
right.
Like, Lee Jordan is the only older non-Weasley.
Yeah, because I don't think it would have been the Weasleys either.
No, it couldn't be the Weasleys.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, I guess it would kind of have to be Lee Jordan then.
Can you name another one? Non-Weasley, non-Quidditch playing older child.
No. Oh, my gosh. That's a good point.
That's our list of
yeah, maybe she did just go down the list of Gryffindors and say, like, okay, cross off all the Weasleys. Cross off all the second years. Who are we left with? Yeah, that's a great point. I guess far be it for me to accuse my boyfriend Oliver Wood of anything. I could see Wood saying this.
I could see him saying that explicitly because he didn't get to play Quidditch.
Right. But I think that
was part of the reason why she didn't want a Quidditch player. She didn't want to be fueled with just, like, we didn't get to play our game.
Sure. And it would absolutely have that undercurrent if it was Wood. But I think that Wood's obsession with Quidditch would lead him to be more divisive in a situation like this. Like, he hates the Slytherins purely for Quidditch reasons, but like it might be that situation of like, oh, this person I hate did something and I hate that too. Yeah. But yeah, I think it works as a Lee Jordan. We also know basically nothing about Lee Jordan.
We know he's a fun announcer.
It's just like, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a, ooh, he's a good Quidditch announcer. So people listen to him.
He's the spokesperson.
Yeah.
We also have, speaking of older people that are Weasleys, Percy is...
She's shell-shocked. He's pale. He's upset.
He is not okay right now.
Yeah.
And the twins point out that the Ravenclaw girl, Penelope Clearwater, was a prefect.
Yeah.
And up until now, Percy was convinced he was immune.
Yes. And there is a line in that Polyjuice Potion chapter that where Percy's like, who would attack me? I'm a prefect. So this does track with what we know about Percy and his ideas about prefects. Obviously, there is more nuance to it that we'll talk about in a couple chapters. But yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
Harry and Ron from there decide to break the rules immediately, grab the invisibility cloak, which has not factored into this book at all to
they
this
just
point.
Haven't needed it, I guess. I guess it's probably easier to turn into someone else than to like sneak into
because they would have to like slide in there. And the point was that they needed to
have a conversation.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They couldn't just like whisper in Draco's ear like, are you the heir of Slytherin? And have him be like, did somebody hear that? So they grab the invisibility cloak and head down to Hagrid's hut. They do pass some patrolling teachers on the way, including Snape.
Who sneezes at convenient times.
Yeah. That I found funny. I like picturing Snape sneezing.
But I do like the idea that the teachers were all patrolling and the ghosts putting themselves at risk, but in pairs, too.
Right.
So they are well aware of the dangers. And even like they think even they are not immune.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry and Ron go down to Hagrid's hut. Hagrid opens the door holding a crossbow.
Yeah.
Which I found odd because he does say that he's expecting somebody to show up, which we can assume he's expecting to be like carted off responsible. But I'm like, how would a crossbow help that situation, Hagrid?
Well, thankfully, we don't find out because the only three people that he wouldn't have shot with a crossbow in these moments are the ones that he answers the door to. Like, if it was Fudge first and then Dumbledore,
I don't think he would have shot Fudge with a crossbow.
I don't know.
Crossbow.
We won't find out. But he was not about to shoot Dumbledore, that's for
sure. No.
Even if he's letting Fudge in.
And I guess we can make the argument that, like, for the last person to come to the hut, Dumbledore has a kind of soothing presence on Hagrid. Just like, hey, play it cool.
If Dumbledore was not there, no matter who else was, that crossbow would have been used on Lucius Malfoy.
Hagrid is not happy about Lucius being there. Rightfully so. So Harry and Ron go down to Hagrid's hut. Hagrid is very upset. He's very shaken. He serves them boiling water because he forgot to give them tea bags. And then there's a knock at the door. So Harry and Ron hide before they can really get into it with Hagrid.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore and Cornelius Fudge show up. Let us talk about Cornelius Fudge.
This is the first time we are getting to know him at all.
He is the Minister of Magic. So like the leader of the wizarding community. His clothes, I think, are an interesting choice. He is wearing a lime green bowler hat, which will recur throughout the series. I think he wears it basically anytime he shows up.
That's his outdoors hat.
But he's also wearing a weird combination of clothing. He wears a cloak, purple pointed boots, which like tracks for what we know of how the wizarding community dresses, but also a pinstripe suit with a red tie. I found this a really interesting choice because to me, a suit is not really, it's a very muggle thing.
From what we've seen, I suppose so. I don't know what Lucius is dressed as.
I kind of assume he's in a cloak.
I feel like everyone wears a cloak, but it's what you wear underneath that might be different.
Right. It's just like a suit and a tie just seems like a very modern muggle.
Yeah, he is a politician.
Yeah. And like he does have that combination of magical and muggle, so I guess we can look at him as kind of a bridge between these worlds, and that does make sense for things that we later learn about Fudge's role as Minister of Magic. But yeah, it's a weird little detail.
Yeah, I almost considered that he was trying to be stealthy in coming here and not be really noticed.
He's walking around with Dumbledore.
But like he was probably wearing a hooded cloak to hide himself and then his regular clothes. Like he would have only been wearing a suit and tie with his big purple shoes if not for the fact that he was trying to
but even then, covertly he's got the go purple get
Hagrid.
Yeah. Yeah, but then like we do later see what wizard formal wear looks like in the
which
books,
is not, it's not a suit. A suit and tie, yeah. No.
It's just, it's an odd choice. It's an odd choice that I feel like has to say something about the character that's hard to talk about right now. More about Fudge. Rowling said in an interview that she based Fudge off of Neville Chamberlain, who we previously discussed in book one when Neville Longbottom was introduced. Just to give a quick refresher of who Neville Chamberlain is, I'm going to steal the summary that the Harry Potter lexicon gives because it's a good summary. Neville Chamberlain was the Prime Minister of England in the lead up to World War II, and he was hoping to avert another war in Europe and looked the other way when the Nazis were committing atrocities and allowed Germany to annex parts of Czechoslovakia, calling it peace for our time. He did eventually declare war on Germany when Hitler invaded Poland, but he's looked at as very ineffectual and part of what allowed Hitler and the Nazis to assume the level of power that they did because he didn't step in and do anything.
Which says a lot about him if that's who she's
facing. Yeah, this has some big implications later.
But even now.
Yeah.
Of like the way he is speaking to Hagrid. Let me get there.
Yeah. And I have more about this, but you can open that up. I do want to slide in one more detail while you look that up. Neville Chamberlain was succeeded as Prime Minister by Winston Churchill, and the actor who plays Cornelius Fudge in the movies would go on to play Winston Churchill in other productions. I don't remember what it's called, but
okay.
It's a role he's pretty well known for. I just found that interesting. But yeah, so Fudge, yeah, he has a weird attitude about this Hagrid thing.
Yeah, he starts off saying, bad business, Hagrid. Very bad business. Had to come. Four attacks on Muggleborns. Things have gone too far. Ministry's got to act. And, you know, obviously Hagrid's trying to defend himself. And I'm under a lot of pressure. Got to be seen doing something. If it turns out it wasn't Hagrid, he'll be back. And there's no word he said, but I've got to take him. Got to. Wouldn't have been doing my duty. He's just like, this is what I'm expected to do. This is what I'm supposed to do. It's not my fault. I'm just doing what has to be done.
Yes.
Gotta look good for the press.
Yeah. And so to talk about etymology a little bit, because it connects well here, I pulled up fudge on the Oxford English Dictionary. And as a verb, it means to fit together or adjust in a clumsy, makeshift, or dishonest manner, to patch up or fake, to cook accounts. And as a noun, it means nonsense, a made-up story, or deceit. And it works there because Dumbledore is standing here saying, I know Hagrid is innocent. Hagrid is saying, I'm innocent. I had nothing to do with this. And there's no investigation or trial or anything to determine if Hagrid was able to perform the attacks, if he was able to set the creature loose. It's just assumed. And he's acting out of pressure. And he admits it. He says,
if someone else is caught, we'll let you go. And, you know, we'll say sorry.
Yeah. He's saying like, yeah, we just have to scapegoat you. Because the public wants somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he takes Hagrid off to Azkaban and he is so flip about it. We don't really know too much about Azkaban at this point. We know it's not a good place.
We know it is a prison for wizards.
And he just seems like, oh, well, you know, if somebody else comes along, we'll just let you out. No harm, no foul. But like, yeah, the harm. Yeah, foul. Hagrid gets to sit in prison.
And not even like, this isn't a punishment.
Yeah, it is. You're going to prison.
It's a precaution.
Yeah, it's messed up. And this is not a good first impression that we get of Fudge.
And then we get another great impression.
Oh, yeah.
Lucius Malfoy steps onto the scene. He comes in looking specifically for Dumbledore because he has 12 signatures from the 12 governors of the school, I guess.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore is being removed.
Yeah.
And everyone is upset about that.
Oh, yeah. Fudge is like,
no, 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 no.
Dumbledore is the only one who knows what's happening right now. And Hagrid has a really good line of, he's like, how many people did you have to threaten or blackmail to get them to sign that, Lucius? Dumbledore is very cool about it. He's like, listen, that's how things work. If they want me to step down, I have to, and I'll do it.
So Fudge is saying that if Dumbledore can't stop this, literally no one can.
Yeah.
Fudge, in like to Fudge, Dumbledore is the most powerful wizard.
Yeah. Again, not a good look for Fudge, that like he's the one that's supposed to be leading the magical community and he's kneeling to public pressure and looking at somebody else to solve the problem.
But also ignoring that person who he is saying at the moment, this is the only person that can solve this problem.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to listen to his advice and let Hagrid stay.
Yeah. Fudge is a real piece of work.
Truly is.
Yeah.
But Lucius makes a point to just insult Hagrid's house.
And then he says that line about, like, wouldn't it be awful if more Muggleborns were attacked?
What a loss to the school.
And it's like, anybody who has spent 2 minutes with your snot-nosed little kid will know this is all baloney.
Yeah. People who spend 30 seconds in the hallway with them after the first attack know.
Somebody who just stands around and listens to the hate speech that Malfoy
is
shouts.
Screaming. Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. He's so slimy. He's so easy to hate. Lucius.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me think, did Ron not tell his dad about where the stuff was hidden?
That's a good point, because it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been at least 4 months. And we haven't heard any repercussions.
Maybe it takes time. Like, I know it takes time to get a warrant. And Lucius obviously is like up there with the muckety mucks where he could potentially delay that or something. I don't know.
I would also believe that, sure, everything was found. But also, it doesn't matter. He's rich and powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That never really goes anywhere. Lucius makes this announcement. They squabble for a bit, and then Dumbledore says, like, it's fine, I'll go. And he speaks a very famous line.
You will find that I will only truly have left this school when none here are loyal to me. You will also find that help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it.
And after he says that, his eyes flick over to Harry and Ron under the cloak. I like this detail. And I think that there are two ways to interpret it. One, when Harry and Ron first arrive, Hagrid pulls out the mugs and pours them boiling water.
So there's more than one cup set up.
Right, exactly. And since it's boiling water, it presumably would be steaming this whole time. So Dumbledore would be able to tell that it was poured recently.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we know that Dumbledore knows about the invisibility cloak from the Mirror Verised chapter last book.
Yes.
So I like to think that Dumbledore saw the mugs, knew about the cloak, and just put it all together because he's a genius.
And then was just like blindly looking around the room, hoping to make it seem
so
like
that is a problem, which I guess maybe these two interpretations can work together. But in an interview, Rowling says that Dumbledore used the hominem revelo spell non-verbally in this scene. I'm not going to do too much breaking that down. Hominem, human, reveal. It makes sense. This spell does show up later in the books. So it is not just a thing that she made up on the spot to make this scene make sense, like perhaps other things that she's said in interviews. But yeah, I don't love the spell explanation. I like to think that Dumbledore kind of like worked it all out in his head. But I guess both things could be true.
Yeah, I guess that works.
Yeah, I guess it could be he sees the mugs, he knows about the cloak, he uses the spell and sees exactly where they are. I just like the detective work angle of it more.
I think that fits. Also, to me, I just always assumed that somehow he could tell where they were every time they used the cloak. Basically, like, because he was able to find Harry in the last book, despite the cloak, and just always seems like an all-knowing being. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not something that we're sitting here like, hey, that doesn't make sense. How does Dumbledore know? But I do like how Hagrid kind of takes a cue and he's like, if anybody wants to figure out some stuff, all they got to do is follow the spiders. Bye.
Yep. And then like, oh, and feed my dog.
Yeah.
Which, to Fudge, I'm sure, is very confused and also like, does Fudge have to feed this dog now? Is that what he's thinking? Do I have to find someone to feed this dog now?
Yeah, it is weird that Lucius and Fudge don't clock this at all. Because, like, Dumbledore, I think, masks it pretty well. Hagrid is not. He's a little less elegant with it all. Yeah, and that's kind of how the chapter ends.
Yeah. It ends on a very positive note, though.
Does it?
Yeah, it ends with, we're in trouble now. No Dumbledore, they might as well close the school tonight. There'll be an attack a day with him gone.
Mm-hmm. Which, I understand that the implication is, like, Dumbledore is very powerful, and nobody's going to try anything, or it's going to be hard to get anything past Dumbledore, but, like, Dumbledore wasn't really doing anything that we know
Everything
of.
Was still happening.
Yeah.
I get the idea that, like, it'll just get worse because the one, like, major threat was Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
So with him gone, why not go for a free-for-all?
Perhaps that was a motive.
To remove, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us to Spell of the Week. What do we got? What's the spell?
The spell I chose is a spell that we're actually not going to learn about for a while.
Perfect.
In the books. Yeah. It doesn't show up until the fourth book, but it is in all of the Harry Potter video games, including the first, like...
Let's not say all.
Okay, probably not all.
It's definitely not in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets for the Game Boy Color.
Okay. It's in a lot of the video games, including the Philosopher's Stone video game.
Which one? It's not that simple.
Well, it's not well defined.
Okay. It is in either Philosopher's Stone for the PC or Chamber of Secrets for the PS2. I think Chamber of Secrets for the PS2.
Yeah. Good game.
It's a great game. I think it's one of the best.
So the spell is the Severing Charm. The incantation is Defendo. Although, Defendo? Defendo.
Defendo! That's how Harry says it in the game.
D-E-E-F. Deef. The phonetical.
Deef.
Deef. Defendo.
Defendo!
It is a charm.
That's the sound he makes.
It is a charm, and as you can guess by the Severing Charm, the name of it, it severs stuff.
Yeah.
It is used to precisely and accurately cut something.
I remember basically only using it on tapestries in the video games.
Yeah, it was originally created by the witch Delphina Crimp, who was a tailor. She used it to cut and make clothes.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the incantation is the Latin first person active indicative for to split, cleave, or open.
Okay.
So
that's,
I guess,
a lot
it's just
of words.
It's just literally a Latin word.
Yeah.
It's not like here's based off the Latin word. It's just, I guess,
she just took a Latin word.
Yeah, she just took a Latin word for split, cleave, or open.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like a spell.
Yeah, it does. This is convenient that we don't need to change that at all. Yeah. And there's not much else I can tell you about it without spoiling anything.
Okay.
But yeah. That was potentially, yeah, I guess I should talk about my mindset.
Yeah,
like,
why did you choose that?
How did I get here? Potentially whoever broke in used this charm to cut up his cloak and whatever else they were looking for.
Harry's cloak. Yeah, when he's robbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Okay, so that is the chapter. I would love to talk about some listener emails, but unfortunately we don't have any. But you can send us an email to owlpost@potrificustotalis.com with your thoughts and your comments and your corrections if you must do that. If we made mistakes, we never make mistakes, but just in case that
we do.
No, we're perfect. Yes, owlpost@potrificustotalis.com. You can email us. You can find us on the web at potrificustotalis.com, where you can listen to our episodes, read detailed show notes, and get links out to all of the sources that we consult in our prodigious research that we do prior to this show, and which absolutely shows by our academic approach to these books. You can find us on the social media. You can go on Twitter and search at Podtrificus, and we will definitely show up because that's our Twitter handle. And other things we are present on as well. Twitter is better. And then, of course, you can subscribe to us anywhere you find podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those places. We are there. And you can review us wherever you like to leave podcast reviews, because podcasting is an open medium that should be accessible to everyone, regardless of what type of device they use and how they listen and any of that. I'm speaking very specifically about a major podcaster who made a deal with a company that is making a big buy in podcasts and closing them off inside of a walled garden, which I'm not okay with. But I'm also okay with anything that makes this specific podcaster more difficult to listen to. And then you can join us for Chapter 15,
Aragog.